I'm Elijah.
I'm Trey.
I'm Trevor.
And this is the Thrive Kombucha Podcast. What up, what up, what up? We back.
What's going on, baby?
I'm not going to lie. That intro music was loud.
Yep.
It was pretty loud.
My ears are bleeding.
Just a little bit.
It's all right. It's dying down.
We're figuring it out.
I don't know what happened. I feel like
I need to yell.
It's all right. Just don't yell. Elijah, what are you drinking there?
All kinds of good stuff, my man.
Oh, yeah.
So last year, you know, we had that special release batch of the hard gingerbread man. And let me tell you
baby.
It is tasty. You want to tell us everything you put in this thing? Because I forget some. I remember most of them. Well, I remember the key ingredient that was different this year.
What was the key ingredient difference?
That bourbon barrel aged maple syrup.
Bourbon barrel maple aged syrup.
Bourbon barrel maple aged?
Maple syrup that was aged in a bourbon barrel. Because it's Kentucky and everything.
They've been drinking a little bit.
Everyone needs to make some sort of thing that is aged in a bourbon barrel.
If you live in Kentucky, everything tastes better out of a bourbon barrel.
Yeah.
That's the general consensus.
And it had clove.
Clove.
And it had
molasses,
nutmeg, molasses, and cinnamon sticks. Delicious. Mm-hmm. No ginger. Yeah. It's called gingerbread, but no ginger. But yeah, that was the flavor. Delicious.
Yeah.
And
it's so
hard.
Good.
It was like a little, it was like a soft stout. It's really good.
Yeah, milk, it's a great chocolate. Winter. It's a great winter flavor.
It's a milk chocolate kombucha. It's delicious.
No.
It's a little too sweet for me.
It's absolutely no milk chocolate.
Yep.
Grow up. What are you drinking, Trevor?
Pineapple jalapeno.
Oh, it was a good batch.
It is. I'll tell you what, though. No, this is really, really good. I could drink a lot of this, but I'm missing the black tea.
Oh, yeah.
Are you?
I am a little bit.
On this batch?
On this one, yeah. It's really good. It's really, really good.
Can I try it?
Yeah, go for it. But I can taste the difference. I can taste that it's a little bit lighter.
The jalapenos are dancing out of this glass.
Oh, they're so tasty.
Which is funny because technically there's half a jalapeno less in these.
It's dancing out of that glass.
There's only five jalapenos. So I just did 2.5 per.
There's six, bro.
No,
there was.
Well, I didn't find a sixth one when I made it yesterday. Anyways.
That's pretty good, though. I like it, bro.
No, it was good. I thought it was plenty.
It's a lot more soft.
It's great.
It's got that
usual, but it's so good.
I think what I've learned about green tea as your kombucha base is it helps the flavors bounce out a lot more with less ingredient, maybe. Like it feels like the flavors are more defined than with like a black tea, like half black tea base. Maybe. I don't know. That's just what I feel like I've noticed of the flavors. We've done a few flavors with just green tea this past week. I've just noticed a difference. I'm interested to see what the cold killer tastes like in green tea. We'll see how that goes, like the difference. But I'm drinking straight out of the fermenting tank. Just original booch. That is
OG
all green
batch,
tea.
Are you serious?
It's not cold. It's not carved. It's all delicious.
You must be a brewmaster.
I must be a brewmaster. Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's my favorite thing just to sip on. Just
there is no chill to this glass.
No chill, no carb. Baby.
There's a lot of it too.
I mean, there's probably like a really tiny amount of carbonation, but
it's
nothing
just good, baby.
Noticeable to most people. But
it's just, I see the thing for me that I do miss. I could drink that all day. I miss the carb, baby. I miss the carbonation.
Yeah, but it doesn't bother me too much, but I like it, though. It's good. It's a good flavor.
I'm not going to lie, though. There's nothing like a little starter batch.
Oh, yeah, dude.
You know what I mean?
Out of Wallace?
Oh,
for now. give it another few weeks, so we're not going to be drinking out of Wallace anymore.
Ooh, no.
Well, maybe Wallace. We won't be drinking out of the other tanks that are holding starter in
straight
the future.
Vinegar,
but,
baby.
Oh, man. Anyways, Trevor.
What?
What are we talking about? Because I don't know.
Yeah, you guys don't know what we're talking about today.
It's a surprise.
Yeah, Trevor said I'm not going to tell you what we're talking about.
Yeah, I just the reason why I didn't want to bring it up with you guys was because I wanted to get your initial reactions and responses, and I wanted to avoid the possibility of you guys doing any research or any prep work.
Uh-oh.
That's horrible.
Now we're going to look like idiots.
It's not that big of a deal. I just didn't want to ruin anything because I want to get your guys' initial reactions and responses. It's not that big of a deal. But first, before that, where's my other...
Where's your sheet, bro?
Where's my sheet, bro?
Where's your one sheet?
Are you prepared for this?
No.
Trevor, do you even prepare? Do you even know what a notebook is?
Do you even
I've
podcast?
Never seen a notebook before in my life. What is that? Is that some new technology? Oh, Trey, you're showing me a notebook.
What?
You're showing me a planner.
I have a planner on my iPad.
Yeah, you
and
do.
And I have a knockoff Chinese Apple Pen, and I can do fancy things.
I don't think
things.
You're allowed to call that an Apple Pen.
It works for Apple.
He
and
said
it's
knockoff.
A pen.
He said knockoff.
And I said it was a knockoff, so it's a knockoff of the Apple Pen.
It's
so
like an Apple-y pen.
Be quiet. Anyways,
hey, that's not.
Yeah,
nice.
I made a planner. I'm trying to like get good at doing this digital planning thing for 2022 with kombucha.
We all appreciate it.
I'm trying.
Yes, it's good.
It's hard.
Yeah,
I'm not organized.
We're gonna talk about something regarding labeling today, but first for the whole month of January, if you will leave us an Apple review, we're going to send you a free t-shirt.
Free?
Free t-shirt. Just pay for shipping.
Free? You kidding me?
Absolutely. And thank you to everyone that already submitted those. I have them all packaged and I'm sending them out today. So
thank you, guys.
It's going to be awesome. Thanks, guys.
All you got to do is take a screenshot of your written review on Apple Podcasts and... take that screenshot, send it to trevor@drinkeatthrive.com along with your shirt size.
Shirt size.
And all you got to do is pay for that shipping.
Yep. So what you'll do, you'll send that to me, and then I will invoice you. And then from there, once it's paid.
So professional.
It's going to be invoice. Sent out to you.
Wow. And how much is the shipping for most people? Is it like flat or is there like a depending on where they're at?
Just a few bucks. Not too bad at all. So just do that, send that to me, and we'll get you your free t-shirt.
We have a very, very special announcement.
Big news.
Actually, when this episode drops.
Today. Right now.
You can now order Thrive Kombucha nationwide.
All 50 states, baby. Nationwide. On your side.
Can the islands get them?
Probably. It's America. We'll figure it out.
If USPS allows it, then we'll send it to you.
Yes. If you're in one of our top three listening areas, like Santa Cruz, California, Dallas, Texas, or West Lafayette, Indiana.
Lafayette. Hometown,
Indiana.
Baby. I was proud to see that one on the top three.
You can order Thrive Kombucha, and we will send it to you. And we're going to have everything available on our taps will be available for pre-order.
Anything in the taps can be sent right to your doorstep.
Not just our flagships. We got some special one-offs like the legendary Pineapple Jalapeno.
Woo!
The legendary Cold Killer.
You better believe it.
And also, every 2 weeks, we're going to have a special release flavor you can order.
We've been doing special releases, and this is kind of one of the biggest passions that we have in this shop is using kombucha as the medium for our creations. And every 2 weeks, we're going to have a special release that is available. What was this week's, Trey?
This week is called Dry Hop for all of our friends practicing Dry January. It is a kombucha that is hopped, and that's it. It's just got hops. And the hops...
We put three different varietals in.
Yeah, we'll
one.
Talk about the varietals when we talk about it later, I guess. Or should we talk about it now?
Give people a little inside.
Well, a little inside. So it's got Amarillo hops. Shout out to Amarillo, Texas. Chinook hops. And a favorite of many, Citra hops. And I'm going to tell you, this booch... You can give it to somebody, and they will probably think, if you don't tell them what's in it, they'll probably ask you what fruit is in it, because it is so delicious, fruity, citrusy. It just makes me, honestly, it tastes like an Amarillo sunrise, an Amarillo, Texas sunrise. Delicious and just amazing.
And we kind of did a little new process on this one, too. We normally do a blend of black and green in on our first fermentation. and we cut it back to just grain on this one.
Yeah.
It really let the hops shine through. And we're going to, the even cooler part about the whole thing is if you order this between now and next Wednesday at midnight, we're actually on the next podcast going to be pouring glasses of this ourselves and drinking it with y'all. You can crack one. You can crack the dry hop open with us right as you listen to the next podcast episode. So yeah. pour a pint of it and kind of talk you through the intricate process of how we created it.
And the cool thing is we're going to do this with every special release. Every time you order our special release, by the time you get the kombucha, you will be able to drink it while listening to the newest podcast episode with us.
Heck yeah, baby. So cool. We'll put a little more intro, a little more info down in the show notes. And yeah, link it there. We'd love to drink some kombucha with you guys, especially this new dry hop flavor.
Bet.
Trevor, we've been waiting on freaking eggshells. What are we talking about today?
Elijah, what is your one? Is it your number one? Top five? I don't know. What is one of your biggest complaints when it comes to the commercialization and sales of kombucha globally?
Label transparency.
Mm,
is this what we're talking about?
Somewhat. All but right. That is a very, very big pet peeve of yours.
Label transparency is one of my biggest ones. It literally doesn't matter to me what you package and try to sell. Oh man, he's pulling it out now.
Yep.
But it does not matter what you are selling to me, as long as there is transparency behind what you are doing and the packaging. Specifically when it comes to kombucha, you'll have something that has, yeah, as you can tell, has no fermentation time, no ingredient. Like the ratios of the actual ingredients used in it are so incredibly low. And that can be marked the same as a product that's gone, like, let's say, longer fermentation time, more ingredients.
It's a lot more work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Kind of like comparing
it'd be like comparing like a Bud Light to like a craft brew from like a craft brewery, like a microbrewery.
Yeah, definitely.
It's like this one's, 80 cents a can and this one's like $4.
And there's a legitimate reason
for
that.
And there's a reason for it. But the thing is, at least in beer and some other crafted beverages, you have, at the very least, you have different categories. Like you've got, like in beer, you've got lagers, you've got stouts, you've got, IPAs, you've got New England IPAs, sours, blah, blah, blah. At least you have that. And there's a better consensus, it seems like, at least between that mass-produced product and that micro-brewed, and there's going to be a price difference. That's kind of common knowledge in that scene. In kombucha, it seems like the consumer's mindset is all on a level playing field when it comes to the product that's crafted in the kombucha case at like your grocery store. So I don't necessarily have all the answers to all this. It's just one of the things that's kind of like, it just needs some work, I feel like, from the industry.
Yeah, and you're not the only one that feels this way. I remember you talking with Pete from Harvest Roots, as well as Adam, and a couple of our other interviews about bringing this up, about it, being a point of maybe not necessarily frustration all the time, but something that it just lacks clarity, and it feels like there's a discrepancy for the customers to know what they're getting out of the experience. But yeah, again, you're not the only one that feels this way. KBI actually recently came out with a code of practice when it comes to things on their labels and how they're going to differentiate those.
I actually randomly read that article in there.
Did you?
At least parts of it. I skim read it, but
you didn't really read
those,
it.
For all of those of you that do not know what KBI is, that is Kombucha Brewers International. They are the main kombucha association in the States. They're the one who kind of, work on legislation and bringing the community together, trying to put some resources together for people. They come out with I don't even know how often, but they have a a publication that they do.
Not terribly often. I think it's like every
quarter or half a year.
Like, I think it's bi-yearly.
I mean, seems like I've been here a year, and I think we've had like three or four show up to the shop. So
I think like two. I think this is the second one.
Oh,
yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
I only think.
Anyways,
a couple, but regardless, they're the people that are putting in the work of trying to actually solidify this as an actual industry, not just a bunch of solo people just doing their thing. They're trying to bring it together.
And they do like a lot to kind of like bring the community like of people in the world doing kombucha brewing together. Like a lot of the bigger Facebook groups and stuff are like the people that are in KBR are usually the ones that start those kinds of things, from what I've seen at least.
Yeah, because they have publications. It's also a good way to connect with people and have conversations with other kombucha forward friends, as one reviewer calls us.
Wait, say that again?
Kombucha forward friends. That was a really good one.
Booch babes. Awesome.
What did you say?
Booch babes.
Booch babes.
Just kidding.
Too far.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to read a couple portions out of this, and I want to get your initial thoughts, reactions to them, and then how you feel about them, or if you feel like things could go a little bit better, or if you are happy with where this is progressing so far.
Yeah, so what are you reading exactly, like specifically? Like, is it this is our official standard on this, or is it just like an article on someone's opinion on these things?
This is an official stand. So this is
an official statement from KBI on this public praxis.
Yes.
Wow. Okay. I'm very interested now.
Yep.
Me too.
All right. So something that I think is really important is they put this in the introduction. So they state KBI is not...
Hey, one second.
Yeah.
Trey, have you even read this publication yet?
No.
You are a professional kombucha brewmaster, and you've not read the biannual report from the only kombucha organization.
They have a biannual report?
Dang,
this
is never
gonna
be publication.
I'm never gonna be invited to speak at the kombucha summit.
No, you're not.
Dang it.
You haven't even read their freaking biannual.
I thought it was just a magazine about like here's some kombucha breweries you can visit around the country.
No,
like I didn't know.
Not hardly.
I didn't know it's a statement.
It's a good
part
of it.
The only statement I've noticed is that they're like trying to get people to pass the kombucha act so we can have kombucha that's like a little,
which I'm all for. Everyone,
air quote,
boozier. Contact your senators.
Yes, contact your senators and tell them that 0.5% is ridiculous and
how many
arbitrary. Yeah, that's all I'll say. Literally. Is that
arbitrary to say the least.
That would be a long rant if I let myself go down there. I digress.
We're
go
not
for
going,
it, Trevor.
We're not going. All right,
all right,
so,
Trevor.
An important thing to read here, I think is actually really valuable, is they say KBI is not a regulatory body. We are a trade association that encourages kombucha consumers by supporting commercial brewers and by consumer education. As a community, the responsibility is upon individual brands to self-regulate. There is ample time for brands to review, respond, and voluntarily adopt the code.
Okay, I have a question for you. Based off of that statement, do you think, without letting this get to a political conversation, should we have a regulatory kombucha like organization that regulates our industry? Or should we individually, without getting too political, you know what I mean, though? Like, because I mean, we kind of talked about it, but like some of the things we've talked about, can we even do it without somebody that oversees it? Or
see, that's the whole
gets
thing.
Tricky.
It's like when you have a USDA organics label, like we're not USDA organics stamped,
but
although
all of
we
our
use,
organics
we
our
use
ingredients
all organic,
are organic. Yeah,
and we there's certain reasons why we've chose to not do that specifically, so that in the future, we may never, maybe we will. I don't know. We'll reassess as we go on.
Nah, I'm good.
But you have a third party that supposedly doesn't have special interests in, you know, letting you get away with things that you know doesn't actually let you be certified under that certification. So like, they have a real, I don't know, man. It's just like, I kind of hate the thought of having like, who are these people that are coming in?
That's fair. Yeah. Cause I think like the other issue is like, okay, let's say theoretically KBI or whoever is in charge of the entire kombucha industry and who is an actual legit kombucha producer. And they say, okay, like, to be a kombucha producer, your batch has to ferment for at least 31 days. No less than that. It can't even be 30 days and 23 hours. It needs to be 31 days exactly, at least. With, you know, because then you get into the complication. It's like, think about how many people right now instantly are not like able to be.
Well, I think,
you know,
that's
what, I mean?
What we're getting ready to get into, yeah. Is that there would be different categories. There'd be different styles of the brew.
Right.
And having someone like KBI, whether it's them or some other place that is in control of giving someone else the stamp of approval, you don't have to have that on your product. But people who are aware in the industry, which, you know, we should say most consumers probably wouldn't even care at this point.
Or notice.
You know, it's going to be like probably 10 years before people actually, like the mass majority of people, care about any sort of a stamp of approval on a kombucha bottle or can. But anyways, for those of us who do care, having that as an optional thing intrigues me, you know, to get some transparency because, as you said, Trevor, it's one of my biggest pet peeves in the industry. Anyways, keep going.
Yeah, let's see what happens. I don't know where we're going yet.
So where my brain goes straight to these is, again, going to be the coffee industry because of how we, for specialty coffee, they have grading. But the grade was particularly towards the final product. So that might be something that would be really interesting for testing the product.
Final product, but even at origin, you do have like, a coffee can still be rated between an 80 and 100. You know, like if a coffee at origin is still below an 80, it's still considered a commodity coffee, and so it's still sold for less on the market. Typically,
that's true.
But that's a little different industry.
Yeah, but that's where my brain space is at.
I know we're not even close. One other thing hit off when you were reading that first statement.
Oh, absolutely.
Is that the self-regulate, was that the language that was used?
Yeah.
Self-regulating.
Yep.
That a company should be self-regulating?
Individual brands to self-regulate, yes.
Yes. So one of the beautiful parts about this day and age, unlike, you know, 50 years ago or whatever, is, you know, along with all the bad parts of social media that we all know, one of the great parts is that there is the potential for great transparency through social media, websites, just this sort of online communication that we all have now to show the transparency of if you're doing something that's a little different and out of the norm, you have the ability to directly connect a lot more easily than before with your clientele, letting them know, hey, when you purchase ours, if this is your angle, you know, like for us, this kind of is our angle. It's like, hey, we spare no expense when we, you know, make our product.
Yeah. Right.
And so we go to the far extents. And so when our product costs $4.25 on the shelf and you see another product for $3.50 on the shelf, it's like there's a reason for that 75 cent gap. Then it may not be worth it for you, the 75 cent reason, but there is a legitimate reason. We're not just doing the same simple process that some of these larger, what I would consider are like mass production Budweisers of the kombucha industry are doing. Not that that's bad necessarily, it's just different. And there's a different amount of intention and ingredient ratio that's going into this product compared to what we're doing. So some of the beauty of that is we're able to be a little more transparent on the back end through, you know, like our social medias and things like that.
Yeah, no, I think that's extremely valuable. I also think that having a regulatory body will be very beneficial, but on one end, we don't have enough research in how
exactly
it all works.
Because it's so opinionated. Like,
yeah,
there's people literally that probably have a lot more pull in the kombucha industry than most, that their opinion could be one of the standards, and what they think is a standard to many people either isn't or is not right. It's
right.
Not accurate.
Right. So as we develop more, but because also like the process, right? So as more research is done, there might be ways of getting around it. Like, I'm just thinking about the Symbiosis fermenters and everything, which still ferments. Does it? Is it and a slower amount or a shorter amount of time, but still?
The other weird part of kombucha specifically is, what are you trying to accomplish?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where the regulations start to come in. Like, with beer, nobody's setting out to make healthy beer. So health and the viability of things and stuff has right. no, you know, that's not even a considered thought. You know, it's just the style and how it tastes and how it expresses itself in that style, you know. And it's like, so with kombucha, most people approach it with a health mindset. And what's the, and as we know, decade by decade, health and health standards change. Research changes the whole landscape of what is healthy for you now was not a decade ago, and a decade from now might not be the newest research. So it's like, I don't know where. So this yeah. will be a fun article. We could probably just need to go on yeah. because it's like, that's where do you even start?
Yeah, we still got to get through the article. Yeah. So
no, it's okay. That's actually a great segue. They have this great little thing that they include that hits along those lines.
Oh, sweet.
For a label requirement, they say the labeling requirements that are most important to consumers are listed below in this article. There is a health promise implicit in the term kombucha based on thousands of years of brewing and consumption. It is incumbent upon all brewers to honor that promise by transparently labeling any process exerted that may shift or alter that expectation. Initial thoughts.
Broad.
Yeah.
Like, what does that even mean, really? You know, you're putting, like, yes, perfect world when everyone is completely honest and people actually care and have the knowledge of what is actually good for you, which that's ever varying. It's like, if I brew this tea for 2 minutes compared to brewing it for 15 minutes, does it have an effect on your health? Maybe. Do you even know what tea does for you? You know, it's like every question, when you get into the health sphere of things, every question gets so nuanced.
Well, this might help to know what kind of categories they have here. So they have raw/unpasteurized, filtered, pasteurized, sterile, filtered, and then from concentrate, using those okay. as labeling things. And
from
then,
concentrate.
What does okay. that mean?
I'm guessing that's like
probably from juices.
Like juices, like cold pressed or from concentrate.
Oh. Yeah, we'll get to that part in a second.
My thing is like...
Wait, can you read those off one more time for us just yeah. so we can have those in the back of our mind?
Raw and unpasteurized, filtered, pasteurized, sterile filtered, from concentrate.
Okay, those are actually really good. I actually really like those.
Yeah.
Because those are things that there is a consensus on. There's a major health load difference. If something is pasteurized or if it's not, if you believe the research is pointing in the direction of all the living bacterias and enzymes and things are good for you, if you believe that, then if something is pasteurized, you're going to understand that is a lesser quality to you than the one that's not, because you believe that those things are good for you. You know what
right,
I mean? You believe
right.
the research leans that way. Trying to be as vague as possible on it, but, you know,
right.
I highly do, you know, we've posted articles and things of research projects that's been done. But if that's not a value of yours, you're just looking for, I mean, your value could be, I'm just looking for a less sugary, you know, full flavor, you know, interesting beverage, and that's not a value of yours. And it's right. like the saving a dollar to get that pasteurized version that can be shelf stable so they don't have to cold storage it and spend all that extra money, that might be good enough for you, you know?
Yeah.
So I like that. I like those.
It's kind of tough too, though, like the whole like kombucha is a health term or whatever it was in the beginning of that statement. It's like, it's kind of tough to say because, like, well, I meet a lot of people that don't even know what kombucha is. Like, they never heard the word kombucha. Like, they were like me a few years ago. And then I meet people that just generally know it's good for you, something like that, right? Like, sure, they assume it's kind of healthy, but, like, they barely know anything of, like, all the other things that are tied into why it's healthy and, like, what makes this, you know, even if you put all those categories, like, to a lot of people, those don't mean anything still. Like, I'm just kind of person that thinks about the average consumer, and, like, to me, it's, like, it's a tough sell to say, like, that, like, most people care or notice, because honestly, if kombucha just all tasted bad, crappy, and weak, would any of us be drinking it? Like, would you have started a kombucha company if it was healthy, but you didn't enjoy drinking it at all?
No, of course not. Yeah.
That's the whole thing. Like, to me, it's got to taste good, too.
It's wrapped up in two things. Two of my new favorite words are vitality and enjoyment.
Yeah.
It's got to be full of, like, we want full of vitality.
Wait, hang on. You said two of your new favorite words? I've heard you, day one meeting you, I am sure I've heard you say that a couple times every day.
Okay, new in the grand scheme of my life.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe focal points, maybe.
Carrots are healthy for me, but I hate them. Facts.
Yeah.
Carrots are amazing. Carrot apple ginger, it's delicious.
That's true. That's the best flavor we've ever made here.
You're also super tasty.
Whoa.
Just kidding, but I love that flavor so much.
It is good.
Oh, my God.
You're also a super taster, which means
carrots are too bitter for me,
unfortunately. You experience things differently than the usual consumer.
That's another conversation for another time. But that's just that's just what I'm saying, though, is like, just because it's healthy, you know, like, it just gets complicated because you have to think about all these other aspects. You have to think about the thing that we can come trapped in this conversation that we're going down, that I've seen the coffee industry struggle with for all the years I've been involved with that, is we get these blinders on and we're only looking at it from our perspective, and we don't think of the average random Joe Schmo that's never had or just occasionally drinks kombucha. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's just my whole thing on it. Like, I have worked in coffee shops where we have people being very particular about every little tiny thing you do about coffee, but the average person is drinking this small amount of coffee with a bunch of milk and sugar and syrups. It's like, they don't care. And so, like, to me, like, I try not to get too focused. Like, I do want it to be a healthy living product. Like, that's what it is. But it's like, I don't want to get too focused on just, like, you know, industry things when we have to think about the best way to translate this to consumer things. Because, like, the average person does not listen to this podcast, does not know much at all about kombucha besides maybe the local one that they enjoy or the GT's bottle that they pick up from the store or Brew Doctor or whatever. It's like,
more likely the Health Aid one.
Yeah, that too. So it's just like,
yeah,
I'm thinking about that person more than I'm thinking about all the people listening to this podcast and their opinions, you know what I mean? Or the people that are writing these articles. Like, it's like, we have this really critical opinion on the industry because we're in it or we are really into it. So it's like,
it's a both and.
Yeah.
Okay, I've got two points to make off of that. One point is there are a lot of people that do care, though, about those types of things. And there is, for the random person, you're totally right. And I'm going to come back to something off of that, which is something that I've appreciated that you've brought to the table when we do these new brews and things. But there are a lot of people that, coming from someone who's worked at Whole Foods for 3 years, who is married to someone who's incredibly health conscious, like, and involved in somewhat of a community of people that do care about things that are raw and living, things that are, you know, not pasteurized, things that are organic, blah, blah, blah. We go down that road. Non-GMO, things like this. People that really value those things. I think the list of things that they started with is a good start. You know, it doesn't tell you everything about the product. Like, you know, there are certain things in an even more nuanced thing. Like, the longer your brew, the more bacteria and acids that are going to be in your product. And, you know, that higher load is going to give you a better nutrient load, all these types of things, you know. But
absolutely,
how do you indicate that on a consumer level to where people understand I don't know if you do unless someone gets into it. So, yeah. But I think that's a great start to things, the things that they listed on there. Okay. I think that it is valuable to have some sort of label transparency for people that do care. Not everyone's going to care. That's fine. One of the things that I love is because one of my greatest passions and one of my greatest, you know, one of the reasons for starting Thrive in the very beginning in the first place is that I was able to fall in love with a product that has an incredible amount of flavor and fun, vitality and liveliness that is also happens to be really amazing for you. And so the thing that I love that you've kind of brought to the table a little bit, Trey, is starting to create things that are a little more familiar, like some of the brews that we're doing are a little more familiar concepts to people. Like this past year, we did, when we had the tap room open and stuff, we did a creamsicle one. Or did we call it the dreamsicle or the creamsicle?
Creamsicle. Yeah,
I think we called it the creamsicle. Yeah. But it's like everyone has... Like every, you know, the 4,000 some odd people that we have following us on Instagram, all probably like 4,000 out of the 4,100 or whatever it is, have some concept of what a creamsicle is and are drawn, and probably like 3,500 of them are drawn to that because it's freaking delicious. You know, who doesn't want a creamsicle right in the middle of summer? And so if we can have this familiar subject in like this familiarized icon or idea that people already have a concept with and draw them away from all these nasty sugar laden, corn syrup filled process, pasteurized, you know, sugar laden, horrible, natural. Quote unquote natural flavors, but you know, that's never a good sign whenever it says natural flavors added, you know?
Oh yeah. I
and
hate
then,
that.
And then, food colorings out the wazoo to get the orange colorings and all these things. If we can pull people that are drawn to that from that camp over to something that meets them halfway, like a creamsicle kombucha, but it's filled with organic tangerines, you know,
exactly
tea, kombucha cultures, you know, a tiny bit of organic cane sugar makes it through the fermentation process. And then, natural vanilla extract.
Yeah.
It's like,
it's just like you look at the comparison, you know, like one thing that drives me crazy is people that are into zero sugar sodas. Cause I'm just literally like, bro, it's the same. It's even worse. Like the stuff that they use to make it artificially. Yeah. Most of the time, the stuff that they use to make it artificially sweet is still just as bad, if not worse. And there's still tons of other bad things that are still in the same difference between the regular Dr. Pepper and the sugar zero sugar Dr. Pepper. Like, it's just like, so it's like one of those things, but it's like when you can make, like to me, it's like when you can just make a product and you can say, hey, like, do you like pineapples? I'm like, yeah, I like pineapples. You like strawberries? I like strawberries. You like vanilla? I like vanilla. Well, here's this weird tangy drink that has those ingredients, all organic, all fresh. It's going to be sweet. It's going to be delicious. It's going to be carbonated. It's going to be cold and you're going to like it. And I can drink that. And it's just like, oh, and it also is good for you. I was like, oh really? Like I can have a good tasty carbonated beverage just like I normally would like to have, except it's good for me. Cause think about it. There's not a lot of carbonated beverages. Like, take kombucha out of the equivalent. You go into the store. You want a good-for-you carbonated beverage. What the heck is there? Almost nothing.
Very few things.
Even the things that are sold as good-for-you, like a lot of the bigger brands of things that are good-for-you, air quote, it's like they still have things that are not good-for-you in them. So it's like, it's just like, that's what's unique about kombucha is it's, you can have so much flexibility. So it's like, one of the things to me is just like, don't make kombucha for just kombucha lovers. Like, if you're trying to make it in this industry, like, if we're only going to be a product focused on health and being a health product, we're only going to be marketable with so many people because only so many people just want healthy things. But if you make something that's flavorful, everybody wants something that tastes delicious. And there's extra draw if it tastes delicious and it's good for me.
Yeah, we're definitely going a little off topic, I know.
It's still
sorry,
great.
We hijacked
your this
whole
is great.
Podcast.
This is awesome.
But it kind of is that dual thing of what I'm saying is that for people that do care, and first off, health is a journey, and it's a long journey when we're all brought up in this country with a normal Americanized diet like I was myself personally. Like, my 8 year ago self wouldn't even recognize myself today. You know what I mean? Like, it's been a long journey.
Because your hair was long.
Yeah.
Literally. But, you know, as far as, like, you know, health goes. So that's a long journey. But for people that are at the point in their journey where they do care about certain things, they've come to believe certain things are true, I think transparency is good in any way, shape, or form. However transparency can come, I'm all for more transparency. But I'm also for the side of things that we've talked about here is that that's kind of way off topic of this episode itself.
No, I think this is really good. I mean, you guys are both saying the same thing that it's being said in here is the term kombucha, it implies health. And they're making a point of like, hey, if you're going to do kombucha, something that is that to the consumer, they assume that this is healthy. Let's articulate, let's be clear about what that actually means. But at the same time, Trey, to your point, is like, yeah, but like most of the time, sell something that tastes good and then tell them that's healthy.
Yeah. It's just like Elijah was saying, it's,
yeah.
And to maybe close on this point so we can move on.
Yeah.
If for healthy people, it's great. It's healthy. And for unhealthy people, it's great. It's tasty. And hey, it happens to be healthy. There's bonus right. for you. So if you're just looking for something tasty, there's a bonus. It's healthy. And if you're looking for something that's healthy, it's healthy. And then, hey, it's also tasty. It's like, it's a bonus for people. Like, you can't, who doesn't want something that's tasty and healthy? Like, nobody. Everyone wants something that's tasty and healthy.
You just feel good.
It's the
doing
best
it.
Combination there is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
but
lots of people, unfortunately.
Anyway, moving on. So,
moving on.
So, yeah. Trey, I'm going to put it to you to come up with the Mountain Dew flavored kombucha.
Oh, my God.
So,
I don't even know what.
It's a day I
what
resign.
Is Mountain Dew even supposed to be?
I resign that day.
That is the question.
What even are the flavors in there?
That, just nobody
sugar.
Knows.
Keep going. You got to go find it out.
It's just
sugar. I mean,
sugar.
I definitely want to do some like root beer.
Oh, yeah.
Except there's one brand of kombucha I had one time that was all soda inspired from, I'm not going to say it, but it was not good. It well, was like they had like a root beer one, a Dutch pepper one, and it was just
we're
like,
gonna do a root beer one. Gross. It's gonna be good.
Oh yeah, we're gonna do a root beer one. I love root beer.
Do
so
you
I can't wait to root beer
like
kombucha.
The gears going?
Oh yeah, we got an idea.
Cool. All right, moving on. So they
what
kinda,
else we got?
Yeah, so they kind of break down article. Two very specific categories. So one is they have kombucha, which they shorthand is tea, coffee, or herb, nutritive carbohydrate, sugar, fruit juice, etc., SCOBY and or starter liquid. Plus flavorings, CO2, probiotics, and other fortifications. So that's kombucha. And then they have a different one, which is traditionally fermented kombucha tea.
Okay. Yeah. I'm already on board.
Which TFKT, shorthand, tea, sugar, SCOBY, and starter liquid, plus flavorings and CO2.
Yes. I love that. Not that literally probably 20% of people are going to care in the next 2-3 years, but if every kombucha brand that was on the side of the traditional, because, you know, people that shortcut processes for an industry are never going to be the loud ones that shout this stuff forward, obviously, for
right.
obvious reasons for themselves and for the, you know, the well-being of their brand. But all the people who go to the extents of crafting traditional kombucha, just like that said, I'm all on board with that, is people that craft traditional kombucha like we do. If all of us shouted it from the rooftops for the next 2-3 years, people would actually probably start to be aware, at least, you know,
that there is it.
There's a difference. Yeah, there's a difference.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Every kombucha is not created equal, which is like the saying that we always say, you know, which is fine, by the way. Like, there's no dissing in that. It's more of a, let's have transparency come forward so that, first off, consumers aren't getting ripped off because, you know, everyone lives around that $3.50 to $4 price point when a lot of kombuchas on the shelf need to be about $2.50.
Absolutely.
For the consumer's sake. You know, it's like, and if that kombucha was $2.50, you wouldn't hear me crying at all. But when it's sitting about $3.50, and we're, you know, at that 425, 450 mark, and it's like, you know, this thing is nothing like what we're creating, but it's still within the range where the consumer mindset is like, yeah, this is this. Why would I spend $450 when this is $350? You know, it's still within that range of convincing you otherwise, you know,
right?
Without any transparency on the bottle, which, like I said, is it going to matter in the short term? No, but nothing does. You know, it takes time. So I'm all for transparency on those two things exactly how they're listed.
Awesome. All right, so those are kind of like the two categories. And then they also imply inside of here that that you'll add other label requirements, which are the things that I brought up before. Honestly, we're gonna kind of bring this a little bit too close, but there's one category in here that I wanted to hear from you guys, like what it what it kind of means or anything, because I'm not entirely clear.
Trey, you hit it.
So they talk about sterile filtered. So they define it here.
Ah, okay.
Using a filter of 0.45 microns or less removes nearly every trace of microbe, creating a shelf-stable product.
Basically, in a shorthand, you're filtering out all the yeast, thus you're filtering out all the bacteria and everything that a lot of people espouse most of the health benefits in kombucha too. You still get the acids, which are great, but you're not getting any of the microbes, all of the living bacteria and yeast. So then if the yeasts are taken out, then it becomes a shelf-stable product because there's no yeast to consume any sugars and then blow up basically on the shelf. And it's already below that 4.2 pH. So, you know, it's a shelf-stable product, you know, just like anything pickled or, you know, sauerkraut or anything like that.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I mean, I have nothing to add. That's pretty much it.
People are not going to, like, the thing is I'm all for the transparency on the labeling, even though probably most people don't care or know, you know, because someone like me does care, you know, at least going into it knowing what it is. And I know that we're the, and Trey, you brought up a good point. We're the exception. We're people who are in the industry bubble.
Right.
But even for people like us, it'd be nice to know, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. There's all kinds of things I like to know in some of the kombuchas I've tried.
Yeah.
That are either good or not good. It's like, still, it'd be nice to know.
Yeah.
Why is your kombucha as much as mine? Why do you think yours is as valuable? I'm just kidding. Like, just kidding.
No, but yeah, I mean, that would be a good one to be on there. It's just like, you know, if you provide value, if you decide that there's value to those things or not, if you believe that the research aligns with those values and you're drinking it for values.
Because you're specifying what's being done versus like that type of filtering versus pasteurization. I mean, they're still creating shelf-stable products, but it's how they're making shelf-stable products.
And I will be 100% honest, I'm not 1,000% sure the differences that would be created if you heat pasteurized or filtered at that low micron level. I'm not sure the differences in the actual product. If I had to guess, if you're putting, probably someone who's filtering like that is putting already pasteurized juices into their product anyways, but my guess would be with heat pasteurization, if you do cold press juices and put them in there, you're going to kill that. With the filtering, I don't think you would kill the enzymes in the cold pressed juice. I could be completely wrong on that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe some people who listen to this podcast know way more about this subject than we do. What are the differences on the actual pasteurization processes and how it affects nutrient load? I should write us and send us some articles.
A little bit of information in here, but we're not going to go into that right
now. All I know is, like, I want my kombucha to be better for me than everything else on the market as far as cold carbonated beverages are. Like, for me personally, aside from my tastes, I want really good tasty kombucha. Like, I want kombucha. I don't want juice or fermented tea. Like, I want kombucha. You know, I want that to taste good, and I want it to taste like kombucha, not to taste like flavored juicy tea. But that's another conversation. But like, also, it's like, to me, I want the transparency of like, you know, it's one thing if it's pasteurized or blah, blah, blah. Like, there's all those things and health benefits we can talk about and we can kind of put them in here. But then there's like a whole nother category of people that's like, they have this super sugary kombucha. And it's like, you know, it's not 3% sugar. Like, you know, there's got to be like way more than that. It's like, your kombucha should not taste as sweet as a soda. Like, it's just like, it shouldn't. Like, you can't convince me that it's good for me and it tastes just as sweet as a Dr. Pepper. Like,
well, that's the whole nother thing about label, like nutrition facts.
Yeah, nutrition facts
in this industry is so jank. It's like no one's getting checked because I swear I have tried at least 25 to 50 brews. I mean, I don't know the exact number of things that sit. And believe me, I don't consume, you guys know, I don't consume sugar on the regular. When I taste sugar, I know I'm freaking tasting sugar. So when someone puts, you know, 8 grams of sugar in an entire bottle, one serving of this thing, and I taste it, and I'm like, there's freaking 30 grams of sugar in this motherfucker. I'm like, that is one of my biggest pet peeves too, because there's the transparency thing. It's like, and I understand when we talked with, Travis of Babe.
Yeah.
When we talked with Travis of Babe, he said it best. He said, we want to see that sugar number about 10 grams lower than we actually want to taste. We want to see it at 8, but our taste buds want to be tasting 18.
Yeah.
You know,
it's true.
Because we're also addicted to sugar in this country and we all love it. You know what I mean? So, and it tastes good, you know? So,
yeah. I just think of people that like to, like, there's reasons some people need to know those sugar levels and they need to be accurate. Like,
oh, that's a good point.
People that
too.
Are, you know, diabetic.
That's the thing,
like,
man. Yeah.
For some people, like those things are very important and they're important for a reason. And for some people, it's a life or death reason. Like, so it's like,
or people,
you gotta be, to me, you just gotta be real. You gotta be transparent.
Yeah. Cause one of the things I was thinking of is how many gut doctors are telling people go in, you know, drink kombucha. And that's something that they're actually like, in some form kind of prescribing it as a way to like help them with the issues that they're dealing with. And they're going and they're getting something that is dead. It's not actually.
Oh yeah. We've had
have
people
those acids
or stuff
like that.
Laden with sugar. And it's like, you're wrecking your whole microbiome with all the sugar influx.
We've had people sent here from doctors.
That's my point.
Yeah. It happens a lot.
And And so a lot of people, and this is, you know, something that people are doing in that, you know, with what I said earlier is that we want to taste things at least 10 grams higher than what we want to see them on a label. People go to alternative sweeteners, you know, and I'm not knocking that or not. I'm just saying that's a route that a lot of people I see, you know, in a lot of, I mean, like literally every other health product field, everyone's sweetening them with monk fruit, you know, xylitol and stevia. And there's one other one. I forget what the heck it is, but everyone,
sweet and low.
No. Frick sweet low. Literally, Southern sweet tea right there.
That's right.
Southern sweet healthy tea.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Anyways. Very, very last one. So this is their labeling from concentrate. Concentrates are made from highly fermented ingredients, so no sugar remains, creating a kombucha vinegar. Concentrates may contain more than 20% water and are exempt from listing their kombucha percentage on the nutritional panel. There is currently a lack of labeling of this ingredient in our industry. Those who make, sell, or distribute kombucha concentrate would be wise to educate their brewery customers on the need to label their products correctly to foster trust and transparency with their consumers. These products may be stored at room temperature and benefit from not needing a cold supply chain to reach the consumer. These products never grow SCOBY as the microbes are dead.
So like the stuff that people buy that are in plastic totes?
No, dude. That's not even that, I don't think.
It sounds like that's concentrate to me.
I thought that
I think that's what they're talking about.
Is that what they're talking about? Yeah, it's just one of those things. If you... One of the things that we've said very often, this is an easy way to wrap that conversation up, is that if you're not creating your starter culture in-house, I think you should be transparent about that on your bottling.
I think so too. Like,
that's the easiest way to say it. That's what we're trying to say with all that conversation.
Yeah.
The basically, easy, simple way to say it is, if you're not creating starter culture, then are you really brewing? And what are you kind of doing?
Well, it's like,
you know,
I think we might have talked with Adam a little bit about this or somebody, but like, and I've heard him say this before too, even not direct quoting him, but like, it's like you have people that brew kombucha. Essentially, you have people that brew kombucha. You have people that brew that like blend acid. You know, it's like you're just throwing things together that you didn't ferment, you didn't brew, you didn't make. You know what I mean? Like, it's tough.
Well, here's my thing. Here's my whole thing. I don't even, you know, in the beginning of this podcast, I was even a little more like, a little more angsty towards those types of, you know, people that do that. I don't even actually feel that way anymore. It's just one of those things. Transparency. I love this episode.
Yeah.
It's like, be transparent with your clientele. Be transparent on your bottling. And should there be industry standards on that? Absolutely. Because what that person is doing is literally that side of things. People are not brewing kombucha at that point. You're blending things together. You're not brewing.
Yeah. You don't even have a mother culture. Like, how are you? I don't know. To me, like, that just, think about you making kombucha on your counter and then, I don't know. This is weird to me, but
it's totally fine. I mean, people make apple cider vinegar, you know, like sparkling drinks, you know, where they spike them with apple cider vinegar.
Yeah.
And like they market as that. It's like, that's kind of what you're doing. And that's totally fine. Just when you put just kombucha on the front, like I'm saying, when we have this lack of transparency in the industry and everything, literally our only labeling is kombucha. And so someone who is acid blending compared to someone who is going through a meticulous brewing process of crafting your culture and literally all the steps we go through to make that happen, it's like, these are just two different things and they deserve different outcomes.
No, guys.
There's a difference between Kavita and Thrive Kombucha.
Oh, my God.
All right. Well, I think that about wraps it up, gentlemen.
That was a good episode. Good talk. We'd love to hear your guys' thoughts, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Seriously, yeah. Like, hit us up with your thoughts on this question because, you know, I know it hits close to a lot of you guys who are brewers, whether you're home brewers or whether you're people who just appreciate or whether you're people who are actually brewers in the industry. I know this hits close to home with a lot of you. A lot of you draw a lot of passion out of what you do. And we'd love to hear your thoughts on the matter. We're bound to literally change our minds completely in a week. And we'll report that back.
Yep.
Let's get the heck out of here, guys.
All right, guys. It's late. Let's go.
Cheers.